Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore how to apply skills and competencies to the world of work.
Welcome to our Skills of the Future podcast. Our theme for this series is HR Game Changers, applying skills and competencies to the world of work. My name is Dan Vanderwerf. I'm principal consultant and co-founder at Perennial Talent. In this episode, I'll be talking to Karis Cook about applying skills and competencies to hiring and onboarding. Karis is the chief people officer at Swift Medical, leading people strategy and operations, employer branding, and team member experiences. She has always held a profound passion for changing the face of HR from the principal's office to being deeply embedded in core company strategy. She has spent the past 20 years working in the startup or scale-up space, sitting at leadership, doing just that, as well as helping companies to scale, creating outstanding employee experiences, and augmenting strong values-based cultures. Karis, I'm so happy to have you on our episode today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dan. I'm so excited for the opportunity to chat today.
Great, me too. So I usually like to start these off with a fun little icebreaker question just to get the conversation flowing. So can you tell me about the best thing that you have watched or read lately?
Sure, absolutely. So watched would definitely be Yellowstone. I am obsessed. Read, I've actually been on this like book reading spree over the past several months, actually like physical books, the ones, you know, with actual pages that you turn. I tried to get into audiobooks for a while, but like felt like I was missing something without that physical touch of a book. So if actually you could see under my desk right now, you'd see that massive book of a pile of books under my desk. And all of them have really been in support of the work that I do. And I could list them off, but really right now what I'm reading is What Will Never Work by Mark Randolph, who is the co-founder and first CEO of Netflix, only on chapter four, but it is absolutely fascinating to read about the birth of what became such a transformational idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have to add that one to my bookshelf. I'm kind of like you, and I also will only read the like physical book in my hand and kind of earmark where I am. I've also never been really able to get into the audiobook or even the like Kindle version of things. There's just something about like flipping the page and actually physically sitting with the book that is kind of nice.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right, so switching gears to our more talent management topical questions, how do you think the world of hiring and onboarding has changed?
Oh, well, that is a massive question. and there is probably a ton to unpack there, and probably can't get to it all, but let me try to tackle at least a small chunk of it. So I would say the pandemic has completely transformed the way in which we both hire and onboard, particularly at Swift. The movement to working from home has really opened us up to the idea that remote work is actually possible and productive. And that sort of idea of Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the office is absolutely a thing of the past. And Swift was heavily an in-office focused culture and team prior to March 2020. I think it's that way for most organizations now that there's been that shift, and definitely history in the tech industry, which has as a result really opened up the world quite literally. Our candidate pools can now be located anywhere in the world. Although at Swift, we're largely focused in North America right now, but we've really begun to distribute our teams, which were before the pandemic largely based within a 1 hour commute from our offices. But this really allows us to build more diverse teams while at the same time has created this wildly competitive market, especially for technology roles. So at the same time, people have really also reassessed what's important to them with things like mission, vision, and values of an organization, flexibility, growth and development, strong empathy-driven leadership being sort of those top important things to them over salary or other monetary benefits, although salaries are definitely still driving competition in the market. But I'm also seeing a lot of people turn down the big salaries in exchange for that purpose, or like contributing to making the world a better place. It's also changed the balance of the market. So it used to be that companies had most of the so-called power in the relationship, but now it's definitely a candidate's market, and employers really need to step up their game and be almost 100% proactively recruiting, building relationships, building very strong employer brands. And it's gone almost completely from that old sort of post and pray model to almost being like a sales and marketing team.
Absolutely.
Where you have to like sell and sell authentically to get the attention of that top talent. And they literally have hundreds of emails on LinkedIn, people desperately trying to grab their attention. So, you know, how do you differentiate yourself? How do you stand out? And, you know, even when going on this big tangent, I promised you it would happen. Even when you do post those job ads, and of course, we still do have to direct some people to somewhere when we're prospecting, but those ads have to speak to something so much deeper than that traditional, here's a list of tasks you may or may not complete while you're in this role. They really must talk to what's in it for me, what's the vision, the purpose of the work that I'll do, how will that work impact the company and the world, what's the culture of the organization? And I don't mean perks, I mean, how do people show up every day? What's it going to be like working for your company? And, you know, really, why should I choose you over the 50 companies who reached out to me this week? They really, really have to stand out.
Yeah, exactly. And I've even been seeing a trend in some job ads that there is like a section in it that actually has that heading, like what's in it for me? What are some of those things that I can expect from working in this role? So I think that's an important trend right now. And it's not only like selling the company, well, it is, but then also selling the team that you will be on and the role that you will be in as well, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And the leader that will be leading you as well is crucial to the success of somebody in an organization. And you know, we hear it all the time, people leave leaders, not organizations. So that's another really important aspect.
And then to try to like carry on that selling point throughout the whole hiring cycle, right? So not only the job ad, but when the candidates are talking to a recruiter or a hiring manager or whoever, that everyone has to kind of be on the same team in terms of what they are selling for the roles that they are hiring for.
Yes, exactly. And that interview process, you must create the very best possible candidate experience.
Exactly.
I mean, really gone are the days where you have weeks or months. I mean, I remember we used to have months to recruit people and you'd keep them hanging.
Now
we're talking about days. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Talent gets snapped up so quickly that you have to streamline that recruitment process and be super responsive. You know, never obviously ghosting people. And even when you're turning people down, and this is where I think a lot of companies can fall short, is that you still need to think that there is a human being behind the whole interview process, and your employer brand is at risk.
Yes.
So you need to turn people down kindly.
Yep.
Never ghost. And like, I strongly believe that if somebody has spoken with you for more than 30 minutes, that you owe them a phone call.
Absolutely.
And to give them actual feedback that's going to help them in their search. And that way, you know, they're either going to be a brand ambassador for you, even after being told no, and recommending, you know, either your products to friends and family or recommending you as an employer, or they can completely ruin your reputation as an employer, I mean, they have access to social media, Glassdoor reviews. So every single interaction really needs to be carefully curated. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So kind of speaking of the hiring process, what skills or competencies do you think are most important right now for organizations to hire for?
I think it completely depends on the organization. And competencies are really determined by what culture you're trying to create, what's important to you as a company, what you're trying to build, the services you're providing, the behaviors you're trying to drive, what's important to you, a multitude of other things. So it's really important to know and to understand as a people leader that you can't just copy another organization's list of competencies and expect that they will be the right things for you.
Exactly.
So even when you really admire what that company has done and built and how their people show up, you really have to do the work to dig into all of the factors that I mentioned. But that being said, I do believe that there are two competencies that I see as being almost universally important right now. So having a growth mindset, sort of being flexible. If we look at the world and it's changing moment to moment, one day we're potentially going back to the office, the next to fully remote, the next to hybrid, the next back to remote, the world is completely in flux. So it's really important to bring people onto your team who are able to flex with you. pardon me. And high IQ, IQ is important, but EQ is really very important. So to have a really heavy dose of self-awareness. And when we're looking at hiring leaders at Swift, we're really looking for people who have a deep level of empathy. And that the first line actually in our leader's role description is that the health and well-being of their teams is their very first priority. And we truly do live by that every single day. It's really essential to be able to navigate this really new complex world of remote working and hybrid and whatever it's going to be into the future. And understanding how your team members are doing while not being able to truly get a read of body language. You really need to ensure that there's a balance in their lives and helping to prevent burnout.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So what can organizations do to make sure that they're hiring the people that have these important skills? So for example, if you're hiring a new leader, how do you ensure that they have the kind of empathy and self-awareness that's required for the role?
Yes, that's a number of things. But I think it comes down to sort of this idea of know thyself. So as in know your company, your strategy, your goals, what you're looking to accomplish. Quite honestly, if you don't understand or like fully understand the business that you're in, I don't believe that you can truly help to build the organization. So what I sort of recommend to people leaders sort of coming into this space is really learn your business like deeply. That's sort of number one. And we'll sort of get to sort of what we look for and how we do that. But in my opinion, it's less to do with coming in with the right skills as it is to do with alignment to culture and extremely important, the ability to learn. So at Swift, we actually use outcomes-based scorecarding and to develop really all of our roles. It's looking at what are the top four or five things that we need this role to accomplish this year in order to get to the outcome that we're looking to get to, so to accomplish our goals. And what are the competencies we would need to see in this person in order to get us where we need to go? And then we design our interview process around that scorecard. So by the end of the interview process, we can actually fairly in an unbiased way understand if that particular person will be able to get us where we need to go. So we're not comparing candidates to each other, we're comparing them to the outcomes.
Nice.
And that does not mean they have necessarily done all of the things that we're looking to accomplish. They need to display the ability to get us there. And also like if they've already done all the things and there's no stretching and learning for them, it's probably not the right alignment because we're looking for people who have that growth mindset. And those people will be bored in a role if they've done everything before.
Right.
So yes, experience matters in some cases, absolutely more than it does in others. We also look at, you know, we have entry-level roles, for example, and those are exactly that, entry-level. So you don't come in with this massive set of fully developed skills. It's actually our job as an employer to help you to build them. So entry-level roles requiring 3 to 5 years of experience, those are not entry-level, 0 years of experience, true entry-level. But that sort of brings us to like the other incredibly important factor that I really cannot emphasize enough, and that's culture. Mm-hmm. So there's not one person that's hired at Swift that does not go through our culture interview. And that's sort of how we determine, does somebody come in with this deep sense of empathy? Do they have a growth mindset? Those things that we're really looking for in our leaders. And that interview is designed to really understand how someone is going to show up at work. And does that add to and augment our culture, or will it detract from what we've built? So does this person align with our values or believe in very different things than we do? And, you know, either one is okay. One is going to get you hired. The other, you're better suited for another organization. Mm-hmm. It is important, so very important. And I mean, there's the phrase, of course, one bad apple spoils the batch. And it's really the same for culture. So one person who detracts from the culture can actually single-handedly ruin what you've built. And I've seen it happen. And that's not okay. So culture at Swift was deliberately designed, taken as seriously as business strategy, equally tangible, equally impactful, deliberately designed and cultivated. So we will not hire someone, no matter how talented and skilled they are, if they will detract from our culture.
Yep, that makes sense. So speaking of these roles that are kind of more entry level, where people have the growth mindset, but they might not have their skills fully developed for the role that they've been hired into, what can organizations do to make sure that they help these new hires kind of get up to speed in terms of the requirements for the role as quickly as they can?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Have a fulsome, holistic onboarding process. that includes so many things. So we use a full 30, 60, 90 day metrics-driven plan based on the scorecard. Of course, we've already done that upfront work. We know where we're trying to get with this role. So we've already built that. So it's really easy to transition that into a metrics-driven plan for people. With multiple check-ins, clearly communicate the plan so the new hire knows exactly what to expect and what's expected of them. But then that onboarding needs to include all of the training that they will need in order to be set up for success, of course. I hear this a lot from leaders. I hired someone, they should be able to hit the ground running. This does not exist, this concept of yeah. On day one, being able to perform, absolute fantasy.
Or maybe on some of their skills, but not on everything, right? Like they might have like exceptional teamwork, but they need a little bit more upskilling on something a little bit more technical, for example.
Yes, for sure. There's absolutely a ramp up period for every single role, even for the most seasoned professional. Mm-hmm. But you still have to learn the company, the people you're with, the workflows, systems, how people work together at that organization. Even about the products you build, like you come in knowing just the surface level of everything.
Exactly.
So, you know, what is it we're doing here? What's the go-to-market strategy? All of the things. So to really build in that idea into your onboarding process, that it's going to take time. So not to have that expectation. And when you sort of build in that time for somebody to onboard, you're setting them up for more success because they have the opportunity to take a little bit more time and they don't feel pressure to be hitting the ground running. and then you can encourage questions, build those super strong training systems, pair somebody with a peer, so that somebody that's able to really support their learning. Sometimes it's intimidating to ask your leader 1,000 questions. Mm-hmm. In those first few weeks. So if you have a peer who's actually been through the same things that you are going through and can spot, you know, where you'll find those challenges or know all of those tricks and special tips on systems, mm-hmm. and all of that to really be there as that support outside of your leader.
Yeah, and then, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then what I also love about like linking them up with a peer is that the peer probably fairly recently went through all of the same stuff. So they might even have better input than the leader would, who's probably a little bit further away from some of the things that the new hire is wanting to learn about.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. They're, you know, they're in the work every day.
Exactly.
They know why they'll get tripped up, what the snags are and all of those secrets. Tips and tricks.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So obviously we've mentioned that it's critical to kind of clearly define the outcomes for a role and clearly articulate what the competencies are or the skills that will help to achieve those outcomes. So what are the threats or pain points if an organization doesn't take the time to clearly define those skills needed when hiring or onboarding new hires?
So this may sound very dramatic, but it is entirely true. The entire success of the company is reliant on ensuring you have the right folks on board with the skills that you need to reach your goals. So really the ultimate risk is the overall existence and success of the business. That's how important it is. And then you'll also, I mean, to be a little bit less dramatic, you'll also create a situation where the team who are already on board are carrying too big of a load, and stress and frustration and burnout become a real factor, which then leads to turnover, which then starts the cycle of recruiting all over again. And that's mm-hmm. not somewhere you want to be, especially in this market, from a recruitment standpoint, and then definitely not where you want to be from a morale and positive employee experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah, everything kind of goes off the rails if you don't take the time to clearly define the requirements for the roles. So I'm just wondering if you have any tips for doing that. So for kind of figuring out what those key outcomes are and then also what the competencies or skills are to achieve those outcomes. Any tips for people out there who don't have that in place yet, who are wanting to make sure that they get those role outcomes and competencies in place?
I think it's shifting the way that you look at role development. I mean, typically what I encounter usually when I come into an organization is, oh, we have all these job descriptions. They're already set. We'll just post the one that we had last time and we'll use that one. And it's okay, maybe that's what you needed, you know, a year ago, 5 years ago. Sometimes people are using the same job description. That's, you know, it's not going to bring in the skills that you're really looking for. So to start to change the view of the hiring managers on how to develop the roles, there'll be resistance 100% because it's a lot of upfront work. But it's worth it because that rolls into the, you know, 30, 60, 90 day plan and you getting the right people on board and all of the things. So it's a lot of upfront work, but it saves so much time and effort on the back end. So it's, you know, framing it that way, but looking at, you know, really what are we trying to accomplish as an organization? What are our goals? And how is this role that we're bringing on? And people will ask for people over, you know, process every day of the week. But like, do we actually need this role? Do we need to restructure a few different systems and processes instead? Do we need to, like, there's so many different things to look at in order to really figure out what it is that you need. But to stop the just posting of job descriptions and relying on what you've done in the past and to really upfront shape those rules so that they make sense. And then you're bringing in the right people that are going to get you to the outcomes that you need today, not 5 years ago.
Absolutely. And I think that's particularly true in the startup and scale-up space, where like the same role you hired for last year, it might have be completely different role now with different outcomes and different responsibilities. So you need to kind of constantly be looking at what is it that you want this role to achieve.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. So my last question is just kind of a broad, open-ended question. Whether you have any advice for other HR professionals who might be looking to make their hiring and their onboarding more effective?
Oh gosh, so many things. I guess maybe summarize much of what I've spoken to already. Develop a strong employer brand, understand your culture, your business, what you're trying to build. Revise and refine your talent acquisition strategy so that you are attracting the right talent, and modernizing the way that you're doing things. Provide the best possible candidate experience that you can, because you are competing against other companies that have already developed those strategies and they're beating you and finding that talent every single moment of every single day. So make sure you've got that right, and ensure that onboarding is really well designed to set your new hires up for success. I would say onboarding is super key. And if you think of it this way, folks are still assessing their decision to join you well into their first few months of joining. So just because they've signed an offer doesn't mean you've got them. So exactly. They probably also still have their hands in a few recruiting fires.
And
could have opportunity to continue interviewing with those other companies that didn't act quite as quickly as you did in making an offer. So you're still in the recruitment process as you bring on new hires. So you need to impress them. They're also the most engaged they will ever be. So if you don't get onboarding right, you lose that opportunity to keep them at that high level of engagement where you really get the best ideas and work and effort and organizational alignment. So why would you want to squander that moment in time? Mm-hmm. So really intentionally think through that onboarding process and think about what your onboarding process was like. What you would have liked done differently, what was missing, what was unnecessary. Did you get connected with the right folks right away? Did you learn everything you needed to know? But then also, very importantly, ask the team, did someone on engineering have a fantastic onboarding opportunity or experience, but someone on the sales team did not? So how do you make that experience consistent? And what did the team feel was wonderful about their onboarding, and where were the pain points? Especially new hires, as they're sort of in the throes of experiencing what it's like and it's very real to them, super valuable source of information. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're experiencing pain points, because it's a really great opportunity for you to show that the people department actually cares about people and doing something to improve things. So even if things are rocky in the onboarding, but you're asking them, hey, how are things going? What can we do to improve? Oh, let me change that right away. That's going to really make a big difference in changing how they feel about your organization. Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. And do you have any advice for how the people team should collect that information? Like, should they send out a survey to everyone recently onboarded, or just a one-on-one informal convo with someone from the team? How is the best way to kind of solicit that feedback from them?
I think it depends on the size of your organization, certainly. For me, I would definitely have those in-person, virtual by Zoom conversation. Yeah. But as in-person as we get these days, conversation with people, because it is also an opportunity to build your relationship with that person that you've probably gone through the recruitment process with, to see mm-hmm. how it's going, to make sure everything is smooth, to continue that relationship with them. So it's, you know, I don't like to ever squander an opportunity to spend time with people and mm-hmm. to develop that relationship and that trust. And I think you get more fulsome answers from people than when they're filling out a survey. But
yeah,
obviously, absolutely. If you're in a massive, yeah. But if you're in a massive organization, that's not possible.
Not feasible, so. Yeah. And it's nice to kind of ask follow-up questions as well, so you can get a little bit deeper, richer information when you're having that more one-on-one convo. So that makes a lot of sense.
Exactly, yeah.
Awesome. Well, some fantastic advice there. So that was actually my last question for you today. So I just want to take this time to thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast and sharing your insights into everything hiring and onboarding. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.